Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is New Opportunities to Deliver More Value with Lab Data in Medicare Stars and Risk Adjustment. The presenter is Richard Van Ness, MS, Director, Product Management, Tricor Reference Laboratories, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All right, good morning, everyone. Thank you all for attending this talk. My name is Rick Van Ness. I'm in product development with Tricor Reference Labs, which I'll expand upon in just a little bit. But the talk today that I'll give is hopefully a really tangible but granular and relatable project around the lab's value in risk adjustment and Medicare Stars. Quick disclosure, I am employed by Tricor. They do pay my salary so that it doesn't conflict with this presentation nor do any of my board assignments or anything else. So I just wanted to disclose that to all of you today. And what we'll talk about is, of course, what our leadership at Tricor is challenging us to do, which is to be a more strategical partner in healthcare. Not just test in, test out, but the value of that test. So we can approach our partners as well as our users and our providers differently so that they know this is why they should use Tricor. So specifically, we're going to break down hemoglobin A1C, which is actually dropped in the clinical lab fee schedule over 26% in the last 5 years, while its value in the economics of healthcare has gone up significantly, specific in Medicare, where risk adjustment plays a huge role. So just one A1C test can lead to a $2,200 risk adjustment for a member. It can also lead to 5.7% of the CMS star bonus. And we're going to break down those numbers so they're relatable for you and your lab or your customers. And we'll also give a tangible example where we leverage that on how we approach our customers who are asking for that same 26% discount, who are asking for us, why should we pay 100% CLFS? And then we'll give a tangible example for you as well if you're wondering for your lab, how do you do this? How do you extrapolate within your market? How do you know your play? But to level set, many of you may know who Tricor is, and if you don't, this is just a quick little update for you. We are New Mexico's largest clinical pathology lab. We do about 60% of all clinical pathology, maybe about 80% of all infectious disease testing, and over 98% of our tests are performed on site. We do over 12 million tests per year, and we have strong educational partnerships with the University of New Mexico. We do almost 3,000 tests now, so we have a very wide test compendium. We're nationally recognized for hematopathology, and we have over 50 pathologists and medical experts that work with us across 12 clinical specialties. We have over 60 patient service centers and draw sites across the state, from tiny little office for medical physicians all the way to large patient draw sites and service centers. We're an independent, not-for-profit laboratory in New Mexico. We've been around for over 25 years now. And our mission is to improve the health of our communities. But to understand that health, to measure that health, to be a more strategic partner, that's what our new leadership is challenging us to do. And that's the heart and the crux of this presentation, is to understand if we do an A1C test, what's its role throughout healthcare? And to do an A1C test, that makes a lot of sense, right? In our community, there's a lot of different individuals, different practices, different beliefs. But when you're wanting to find that specific health condition amongst them, laboratory is the majority of medical decisions. We all know that. And even though patients have multiple providers, multiple places they seek their care, they will always come to the lab itself, which enables you to create a longitudinal history of that individual so that if a comorbidity or a risk factor or something happens, you can use that information to help coordinate their care and more specifically measure the economics that they have associated with them. And that's actually really important because here's an OIG edit of Medicare Part B that clearly showed esoteric and molecular tests, the compensation for that is going down. But within it, as you can see, basic chemistry tests, what they're paying is leveling off. It's actually going down. And this paper clearly outlined the volume is actually going up, but what they're paying in Medicare B is going down, which they reference PAMA. PAMA is having an effect on the lab, so we need to understand our value and what we derive for patients in their overall economics. And it makes sense, because if you actually look at the 83037, the CPT code for hemoglobin A1C, since 2017, it has dropped 26.5% to where it's now being paid at $9.70. And when you think about the overall money flow in healthcare, right? So money accrues at the top through taxes and employers and premiums, drops down to the actual insurers, which then goes down to providers and then comes all the way down to the lab. But what's important is when this piece up here says, nope, we're going to pay $9.70 for an A1C, every single one gets a haircut. So our lab service agreements, our provider agreements, when we say UnitedHealthcare, you're going to pay TriCor 100% of the CLFS, they say that's fine. We'll get our haircuts through other ways. And that's why it's important for us to understand, well, what is A1C in the overall healthcare scheme? So to do that and to present something that hopefully is very relatable to all of you, let's break down just basic Medicare Advantage. Let's understand how these Medicare Advantage payers are paid, and specifically, where does A1C play a role in that? So there are 31 million Americans. This is growing huge for Medicare Advantage. It's actually referred to as the very first value-based or capitation-type plan. These Medicare Advantage payers are given a per-member, per-month payment that they must try and keep expenses below in order to make a profit. And that per-member, per-month basics is on, you know, again, this is very rudimentary. There's some other pieces in here that I just left out. But you get a flat rate for the person's age, gender. You get a risk score, which we'll expand upon here in a minute, and a quality rating for that health plan, which we'll also digress a little as well, to come up with a per-member, per-month payment to these insurance companies. And what we'll focus on right now is the risk score. So what is it? Why do they have a risk score? Well, in 1999, when the government was debating about doing Medicare Advantage and paying private companies to overtake retirees, these insurance companies were like, I don't know anything about Jane Doe. I don't know how risky that person is. And you want me to handle all of their care under a capitated rate? It doesn't make any sense to me. I'll just cherry pick and only give care to those that I know are healthy. And so the government said, okay, well, how do we avoid premium and bias selection? And that is, well, if you can prove to us Jane Doe has rheumatoid arthritis, has an endocrine disorder, then we will pay you differently for Jane Doe. We will give you extra money for their care because they need more care. They are riskier. Now, in order to do risk adjustment, in order to get that extra allotted payment, that member must have a face-to-face encounter that's paid by the insurer with a diagnosis within the calendar year that they want to claim that risk adjustment. So a new member enrolls January 1st. The payer thinks they have diabetes. Well, what they got to do is make sure that that new member gets a face-to-face encounter. They pay for that encounter. They see the diagnosis, and they submit it to CMS, and they get that adjusted risk payment. So let's apply that to the lab. And here are just three simple examples to show how a lab is very key in risk adjustment. So let's say John Doe, Medicare Advantage, gets an A1C, clearly indicative of diabetes. They get it by an emergency physician in the calendar year they want to claim it. Insurance, Medicare will say, okay, can I claim risk adjustment on it? And they'll clearly say, well, this is not a face-to-face encounter. That's a very specific, like, annual wellness visit. AWV is what they call it, or a health risk assessment. It's sort of your annual checkup with your primary care physician, so that does not qualify. Alex, same A1C, clearly indicative of diabetes, did see their primary care doc, but it was not within the year they want to risk adjust. So it's up to the insurance company to get Alex to their annual visit this year. Jane, on the other hand, did get an A1C by their primary care doc with a result of this year. Jane does qualify. And you as a lab can easily see, I know the A1C, I know the ordering doc, I know the date it was ordered and collected. I'm pretty certain this person qualifies for risk adjustment. I don't know if the insurer paid the claim. That's not my role as a lab. I don't really care about that face-to-face visit where they paid it or not. I know they're diabetic. I know what happens within the year. I can engage my payer differently because now I know the patient's diabetic. So let's look at the difference between Alex and John compared to Jane. So Jane, if she's a 72-year-old female, the risk adjustment is about half of the payment, but there is no diabetes diagnosis or a face-to-face encounter, so therefore the payer, if you just sent the benchmark at $1,000 per member per month, that's roughly what Medicare Advantage pays. It differs on the RVU and where they're located, but if you just set it bare bones at $1,000, then the insurance company gets $5,700 per year to cover Alex or John's care. Or in this case, Jane, who did not see her primary care physician yet. But if Jane did see her primary care physician, did get that diagnosis, because the lab was able to accurately produce that result for the provider, the adjustment is up to $7,900, or a difference of $2,200 for that A1C above 6.5. That's a very simple example of, I may get paid $9 for that A1C, but it has a dramatic effect on how the insurance company is paid, which is critical in Medicare Advantage, because that's what's happening. And with a lot of these, there's Carbon Health, there's a lot of new provider groups propping up, focusing strictly on Medicare Advantage. And if we look at one of the most successful models out there, it's Oak Street Health, which was founded in 2012. Their model specifically focused on that risk adjustment. They would go to the insurance companies and say, I know you're paid $1,000 per member per month. Give me 75% of that, and I'll take care of all of their care. And that leaves you the 25% to do all your administrative expenses. So give me $750 per member per month. I'll take care of all of your Medicare Advantage members in a certain radius. But if I risk adjust, I get 75% of that. And that was the focus of their business model. And they were so successful at it, they grew to over 160 clinics within just 10 years, to which CVS acquired them for over $10 billion last year. But again, it focuses on that risk adjustment. It focuses on where the lab can help elicit that diagnosis for that provider. So if you're a lab, you can approach that provider differently. You can approach the payer differently because you know the value of your test. So that's the first example. The second example is looking at the quality rating, the stars, the thing we always read about a lot. So what is the lab's role in UnitedHealthcare's Medicare Advantage star rating? Well, quality, when Medicare Advantage came out, they were worried about risk, but they're also worrying, are our members receiving appropriate care? And the way they audited or pursued that or understood if their members are happy, it was through the CAHPS score and HEDIS. The CAHPS score is the majority of it, right? Are you happy? Are you able to get a provider? That's the majority of the quality rating. But within the HEDIS, and specific to lab, is what we're going to break down now. But let's level set at what HEDIS is. A lot of you have probably heard of it. Many of you are shaking your head. You know what it is, but we'll take a step back and take a look. So it was created in 1991 by NCQA. It was initially generated so consumers like us could make an educated decision on what we want our health plan. Is it a 4-star? Is it a 5-star? You can pretty much assimilate it to Yelp for healthcare, is what it was. And it's a standardized measure to compare health plan to health plan. There's roughly 90 measures across 6 domains, like access to care, effectiveness of care, and it's a way that lab directly impacts some of them. And it's a measurement that occurs throughout the entire year, which we'll get into in just a minute. If you guys have any friends at the health plans, they call it hell every day in spring, because in spring, they are literally gathering all these medical records to prove, yeah, we had a 50% diabetes compliance rate. But how do they end up being incentivized? What is their monetary value in healthcare? Well, again, created in 1991, but in 1999, CMS started incorporating it in their quality score with CAHPS. But then in 2005, they implemented pay-to-play. And that was the first financial incentive associated with HEDIS. And that was the first way they started incentivizing these health plans. Increase your HEDIS score, and we'll pay you more. And then, of course, in 2012, with Obamacare, all the states had the ability to opt out and begin to manage their own Medicaid population. New Mexico was one of the first of four states to do it. There are now almost the entire United States, about 38 states now do it. But it's a dollar for match that we won't get geeky about. But the point is, all of those Medicaid Advantage plans are now using HEDIS as well to incentivize their managed care organizations in their state. So what's a HEDIS measure? Well, specifically, let's look at, there are some that are directly attributable to the clinical lab. Comprehensive diabetes care. Basically, health plan, you have 100 individuals that have the diagnosis of diabetes. How many of them got an A1C test, an eye exam, and a blood pressure in control in that calendar year they were enrolled? 50 got an A1C, that's a 50% rating. 75 got the eye exam, that's 75% rating. There's a lot of others that are directly attributable to the lab, like your kidney health evaluation patients for diabetes, that's an EGFR, and a UACR each year for someone with diabetes. There's colorectal cancer screening. There's a few others that we won't talk about here. And then there are some that are indirectly involve the lab. Statin therapy for patients with cardiovascular disease. Lipid, triglycerides, you guys know the patient has cardiovascular disease. You don't know they're taking the statin therapy. Some of you may, because you're in an integrated system at TriCor, we don't. But what we can say is, well, we do know how many most likely qualify for this measure. They should be taking Lipitor. We just don't know because we don't get prescription data at the lab. But that's kind of where it indirectly involves the lab. Let's focus on, again, that A1C test that's directly attributable to the lab. This chart is just a long way to just basically say there are a lot of measures that Medicare Advantage uses. There's a lot of them they incentivize on that I won't digress too much into because I'm sure half of you would leave the room. So let's just focus on, well, what is the bonus payment? What is the percent that is allocated for that A1C for comprehensive diabetes care? And basically what it is, about 5.7% of the bonus is for C11. Members that get an A1C test that are diabetic, but more specifically, it has to be controlled, which we'll dive into in just a minute. But last year, in 2023, the average bonus payment to the payers was $374 to $534, with a median value of $417. So 5.7% equates to $23.77 is what that A1C plays a role in their bonus. But that's assuming everyone has diabetes, which they don't. So if we actually look at a specific health plan, and what I did for fun is just look at Louisiana here, because we're all here and we can relate to it. And what you can do is take a look at, okay, UnitedHealthcare has 31,000 members enrolled in their Medicare Advantage plan. These numbers I just took online from CMS's publications. And what we say is, okay, if there were 31,000 enrollees in 2023, their star rating is 4. We know to get to 5 stars, that is a $13 million bonus they will get. And 5.7% of that is $750,000 for the A1C controlled. And now you can just take a look at your market size. Say, if I'm a lab in Louisiana, how many Medicare Advantage United Healthcare members do I serve? And if you say, well, I serve 38% of them, that means I get about 12,000 of these members come to my lab. It's roughly about a 28% diabetes rate in Medicare Advantage, so that equates to 3,700 members with diabetes that I see at my lab regularly. which means my impact on the bonus is $285,000. And do the same thing across all the other labs that may either be a smaller player or larger players, but they all equate to the same value of $76 for that A1C, because you're normalizing across the number of diabetics enrolled in that health plan. And that, my friends, is just like another example where at $9.71, we published this a couple years ago, where we as a lab get paid $9.70, but it's worth 5x in HEDIS. It's worth 5x more in the quality of healthcare. And if I know my market size and I know my impact and how many I serve, I know how to negotiate differently with these payers. I know that's why I can say at Quest, you will put me in your preferred lab network because I give you this information and I know I have this impact. So negotiate with me differently. You will give me 120%. But more importantly, I'll take upside risk and I'll say, if you receive that measure, I get 10% of that. And that's the way we started to negotiate differently with these payers. That's the way our leadership and a lot of this Lab 2.0 stuff is trying to teach us, is they're trying to tell us, negotiate differently, know your value of your test. Because the CLFS rate has gone down 26.5%, whereas the value of that test, CMS's bonus were 30% more in 2023, risk adjustment went up 1.7% in 2023, which means the value of this test has gone up significantly in just last year, while it continues to go down on what we're paid. And now I'll break down an example for you for that TriCor uses. So for example, a provider would come to TriCor and say, why I'm giving you 100%. Why? Why am I giving you full fee schedule? I could just negotiate with Quest, who is 30% less than you, TriCor. And we'd say, okay, we'll tell you what. Give us your attribution list. So a minute ago, I told you how you can estimate and extrapolate within UnitedHealthcare. When a provider came to us, we said, you know what? Give us your attribution list. Tell us who is enrolled or you're responsible for, and we'll start giving you A1C data. We'll help you prop that measure up. And so what we investigated was, after 2 years, what was their risk adjustment and what was their quality measure, everything we just walked through. And so the provider in 2021, and sorry, I guess this got a little cut off, they have 16,000 members, 10,000 are diabetic, and now we wanted to look at TriCor, how much do we do testing on? And about 7,300 of them, of the A1Cs, were ordered by this provider group itself. And 991 A1Cs came from other provider groups, right? That's our outreach. They came from somewhere else. But this provider's telling me I'm responsible for them. Okay, I'll give you A1C data on them. So their total compliance was 76% with the A1C. Specific to the controlled measure, they had about 6,000. And at that point in time, they were a one-star measure. 2 years later, they increased the number of A1Cs on those members in their facility, which means the ones outside their facility started going down. They started to care coordinate better. They started to get those members outside. Remember, value-based care is all about controlling your variables. If they're outside your system, you can't measure them. So they started referring these patients back into their system, and they increased their A1C compliance and their quality within the 9%. So they went to a three-star health plan or three-star provider, and they got a bonus of $819,000 to get to that three-star C11 measure. And now they're risk adjusting better because, again, 290 are now in their system. So they know the claim's been paid. They know the diagnosis is there. They know they're risk adjusting well. That's worth $640,000, which equates to about $133 per member for diabetes, or more specifically, $90 per member enrolled. That's why you're going to pay me 100% CLFS. That's why you're going to use us as your preferred lab. That's why, you know, healthcare, I'm in your preferred lab network, because we're able to convey these numbers to you to show our impact and our overall value to your members. Now, if you're at a lab and you're curious, like, oh, we don't get attribution files, we don't have member eligibility files, how can I do this? Well, there's one really simple way that, if you are curious, is you could actually go to your revenue cycle team. And you can say, I want to know my percent of Medicare Advantage, UnitedHealthcare, Humana. How do I measure and extrapolate my impact in those health plans? Well, what you can do, and all we're all very familiar with this, right? It's eligibility check, 270, 271. You're asking an insurance company, hey, is Jane Doe insured by you? Usually they'll respond back, Jane Doe is or Jane Doe isn't. CMS will not only tell you Jane Doe is, CMS will tell you a lot more. They will literally tell you what their COVID vaccine was, the lot number and the date they got it. But they'll also tell you they did not receive their C11 measure. They did not get their colorectal cancer screen this year. So you can flip that eligibility information to now know, I did see this member, they did not get the quality measure, or they did, or because it was because of me, and now you can begin to understand more specifically, what is my percent impact in my market? How do I understand to negotiate differently with United or Humana? And again, it's usually a free service through something called Waystar. It's very, very, well, Waystar is one of the providers that allows you to do it. But it's just CMS. It's just an eligibility check. And they will give you depths of data that you wouldn't even understand, that you could just flip it back and understand your value in that market. So to summarize, my friends, like Lab 2.0, TriCore, we need to understand our value to be a more strategic partner. And this is just one simple example of risk adjustment and Medicare Stars that allows us to negotiate differently, because we know you're going to give us 100% of that fee schedule. Because of that, you're able to risk adjust better and you're increasing your star bonus. Or you can even flip the script more and know, I have an opportunity to do more for this payer. I have an opportunity to negotiate differently. And the laboratory is in a very unique position because of not only your ability to diagnose, but because of your infrastructure, because of your brick and mortar. You can now see them coming in and out of your draw site, and you can see that value and then start to pounce more on that opportunity. And that is the end. I appreciate you guys sticking around under some of that geekiness, and I'll answer any questions you have.
Yeah, Dr. Crawford.
Yeah, so your question is how the star plays a role in your overall ranking, which determines your payment?
Yeah,
that's a great question. So if we go...
Then you're going 100.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so with all those, with the star, with the overall star rating, like I was mentioning, there's various domains, and the A1C is way down there in the effectiveness of care, which is only 5.7%. But I think what you're saying is like, well, if I got the payer up to 3 or 4 stars, but they didn't do well on their caps, they didn't do well in these other things, do I still get that extra bonus payment even though the payer didn't go up 3 stars? I think that's your question.
It's a different one. And my perspective is more health system than it is payer.
Okay.
Which is, because we see this play out at Northwell, you know, this hospital is 3-star, that hospital is 4-star. That has material value
yeah.
in what CMS pays for DRGs.
For DRGs, yes. Yeah. And I love your comment. I didn't break down DRGs. It is whack-a-mole. It is DRGs. But I think what you're also saying, too, which is relatable to this, is a lot of these payers, Humana, I mean, United owns Optum now, but Blue Cross, Molina, they don't own clinics. So they're literally taking these measures and the risk adjustment, just like Hoke Street, and they're forcing it down to those who do. If you don't do it, if I get penalized, you get penalized. And so I think to your point is that right there is imputed, but if I measure more specifically of how many I serve and where my opportunities were, that's the more realized space.
Expand your geography as well, because you're giving specific examples with specific realized value of
Yep.
Hospital, ambulatory, paramedical risk management, you can help your health system do the back end.
Yep.
And
yes.
You've got to track the financial impact and say, I lab helped you do that.
Yes. That example I walked you through is actually Optum in Albuquerque debating about kicking Quest out. And we said, here's where we can help you, not just from a draw sites perspective, but from a data perspective.
So for you, you know, an example given, it's a competitive market advantage.
Yep.
For me as Northwell Labs and System Lab, it is a daily effort to make sure the health system knows the value of us as
of us.
Their in-system lab and what they're going to lose.
That's it, yes.
They say, hey, I just want a commodity,
I want that haircut.
I just,
to, yeah.
I just want
exactly. Yeah.
Commercial lab to be less so I can keep more of the neurosurgeons.
Exactly. Thank you, Dr. Crawford. Yes, we'll start here, ma'am.
Hi. Just a quick question. Since this is all dependent upon data accumulation, data mining, and then feedback to your how did you set up your infrastructure to stay not only with your value, but on top of it?
Sure. Yeah, like that's a great question. So your question is like, how, from a data infrastructure perspective, did we set it up to where we can easily track things and convey the value to payers or providers? Yeah, great question. So we have SunQuest right now. SunQuest is terrible at longitudinal patient history, the ability to get data out of it. It's horrible. It's very good at running our lab. So what we needed to do was set up a database external of SunQuest. Just a basic Microsoft SQL database that just extracts everything out of SunQuest, applies an EMPI to it, right? Master Patient Index, so that Jane, or so that Richard, Rick, or Dick, it's the same one. So now I know their history. And then any other external data I get, like an attribution list, I can then match to that database, send it back to the provider or payer, and say, I can see who you ordered results on, and I can see who you didn't order results on. Does that make sense? So, I mean, the biggest step was getting everything out of SunQuest, applying a longitudinal history to it so that whoever comes to us, payer, provider, we can easily convey to them our impact and our role in the overall scheme. Does that make sense, Rita? Sorry. Sure. That's a great question, Rita. Kazra.
Imagine the health systems who are thinking about selling a portion of their lab or to sell off the lab. They're getting up the most intelligent part of the population that they're going at risk of. So the longitudinal view really just becomes the holy grail of a lot of medicine. We have to protect that. To fragment that piece, we really are basically taking a big chunk of our business and giving it away.
I'm giving a talk at 1:45 this afternoon, and I'm certainly going to cross-reference Rick's talk. At Northwell, we did our first data scientist hire on spec. We built that middle box. It was Tyler's chain. And then he hired the second data scientist, and we were working directly with the health system CFO and with managed care to do this kind of work. And there was a funny moment around about 2017 at our annual budget here. Your knuckles get really bloody. And it was rehearsed. The CFO fingered these two data scientists in our spreadsheet and said, who are these people? And we were rehearsed. We said, this is what they're doing. This is their return on investment. This is the realized value of Northwell. And so for us, it's basically an annual budget justification. And it doesn't take a lot of data scientists. They have to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's actually a very small team. 2,200 other people are generating the lab results. Data science team, 1, 2, 3, 5, working with your managed care, especially, but also working with your risk management people.
Yeah.
Can the NIDUS of the data science team that is bad and not part of, well, everybody's got a dashboard, is it, you know, we've got data science elsewhere, but you've got
to
be.
If you can make, and you will be able to make sense of it. So Kazuro, one of our previous leaders, was a huge believer. He proved it. We were able to help in the sense of, if you interpret those results for them, payers don't know what gonadotropin is. They don't know a lot of this pathology data. But if you help them, that allows you to negotiate differently, if that makes sense. So crazily, we actually get paid subscription models. We've diversified to where we get paid. Yeah.
We justified an annual budget review with attributable dollars that the health system gets under risk investment payments and the HEDA stars. Saying, we found you those global recommendations. We found you those diabetes. That's what it's worth, by the way. Rich teaches us. We teach him.
Yeah. I promise my friends, did you have a question? I'm sorry, or did it answer?
It was answered.
Okay.
My question was resources. How do you justify the resources?
It's a great question.
And then ongoing.
It takes a first time.
And
it does.
And who in your, you're giving the presentation, but who's actually doing the work?
Yeah, we have two very specific data individuals that are able to set this up, and then I hit them up and say, hey, give me a list of all of Humana's members that have hit us, because I'm going to Humana to negotiate differently, or to the point, you know, just we literally do upside risk and risk adjustment. We will literally tell the payer, you just had someone qualify yesterday for endocrine disorder. If you collect that $16,000 payment, I get a percent of that. And so we do that.
That
it is an investment.
The struggle. It's a good idea, but who's going to do it?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work, especially with data sets that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so, but it's worth it.
It is. It really is.
It takes leadership to make it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We really got to, this gets me on my high horse. We in lab need to stop this cost plus model nonsense. We are really good about knowing our direct costs, indirect costs, and pennies on the margins, right? That model is pretty much a dead deal. We need to start thinking cost avoidance. And what is the pain on the customer side? If we can display the cost avoidance model in another strategic plan, and then our CFOs are very much aligned with that, resources are going to basically be provided to fit that economic model. The reason that we're not able to do it, because we're still in a cost-plus model. We're basically counting pennies. We need to stop that nonsense.
You still have to earn the pennies.
You do. You still have to earn the pennies. But the data, we're doing 27% margin on the data.
They got to be bright and shiny as well.
All right. I'm sorry, my friends. Yes, go ahead.
Matt Maluski, how are you?
Good. Oh, I appreciate you.
You have to think about what your lab does. Is it a reference lab? It's this model. It's a hospital system and some outpatient clinics. You have to think about the contracts that your lab serves, because that's where the payment takes place, right? That's different. If it's a med group, a big POL, even different. But the story behind this data and the meaning that it has upstream is really, really important to understand. Anybody
appreciate you playing my ego, Matt. And I just one quick comment, my friend, is like, in all of your provider agreements, there will be a provision that says from the payer, I need access to all my quality data. You will give me quality data on a dime whenever I want it. Sure, we give these payers A1C test data all the time. But if you make sense of it for them, if you say, no, that was ordered last year or whatever, like, that's what they need help in, and that creates that opportunity, to your point, to understand that's my impact for you. You've been so patient, man. Thank you.
Great talk. Really enjoyed it. We did a data warehouse within the past 6-8 months for anybody who hasn't done one. It's really doable. We're probably a lot smaller than a lot of people in here, around 40,000 reps a month. But my question specifically is, we're in the reference business as well in Texas. You mentioned Quest and 70% of this, and I'm arguing for 100 or 120%. Is it safe to assume that Quest is not acting on the data like you are in this case, and so we have an opportunity to do this? So that's what, okay.
I can't speak for Texas or any place else, but I can say New Mexico, absolutely. Every single provider, every single payer we negotiate with are saying, we don't get this from Quest. And we've literally had crazy conversations where they said, if I get this value, how do I send more members to you? And I'm like, that's an inducement question, my friend. You either going to pay me differently or, you know, don't bring that up again. Does that make sense? Like, it, they do immediately tell us, Quest isn't doing this for us. How do we get you to do it? Yeah, it's just, we usually start it with straight up, I need your eligibility file. So then I can go here and get you the value. And then to your point, it's, yeah, I can give you A1C and you guys can easily do, you know, what we walked through. But if you're looking for timeliness of prenatal care, which is based, it's another indirect lab measure, which is basically if a woman is pregnant in the first trimester, she has to see an OBGYN. And that is a HEDIS measure that is heavily incentivized across all Medicaid insurance companies across the country. You said it yourself, timeliness. I know on the gonadotropin, I know the first trimester screen or the blood bank workup, I know exactly she's in 8 weeks, and you got 4 weeks to get her there. And every single payer tells us,
but you send a fee.
Our claims data doesn't say this. And so what we do is we literally take this, we say, okay, oh, Jane Doe's pregnant, and we literally send it to them the next day. And the care coordinator reaches out, and I didn't expand upon that one. We published on that, where we not only helped payers increase their timeliness in postpartum care, we also saw a decrease in outcomes. We improved their NICU and their preterm delivery because we found them quickly, we found the risk factor quickly, and now we're starting to correlate to outcomes to where we're able to say, I don't want $9. I want $50 per member per month for every pregnancy that you have. And that's where we're trying to go. Yeah.
Identifying the lab values, like, for example, the Medicare Advantage, are you just going to their star ratings and saying, like, I know how they can make more money, and that's where I'm going to focus on my reporting?
Yep. That's the best thing. Medicare and Medicaid is all published. It's so easy to just get on there. Yep. You can literally just cross the dots and know, like, the example I walked through with Louisiana, that, I mean, I did a cute way of presenting it to you. Oh, I'm sorry. I did a cute way of presenting it with a nice chart, but this is all Medicare Advantage published data. It's all just Excel spreadsheets that you just, you know, to your guys' point, I know you have 31,000 members, and now I know how many come to me. Now I know your star rating. Now I know how many are diabetic. I know my impact on your measure.
So when you present this data to a health plan, who do you deal with? Who receives it? Who understands it? Who realizes the value of it when you talk? And then how do you set it up? Say you something every day, every week, every month? How does that work?
Chief Quality Officer, Chief Medical Officer. Those are your two prime points.
Out of the payer.
Never, out of the payer or provider.
They're trained to give you less money.
Yeah.
That is, they'll tell you, throw that in, we're doing business. Make it a value add. I think that would be the silliest thing we can do, just throw that in. This is a different customer.
Yes, sir.
So do you have like a SaaS agreement? Are you subscriptionizing to monetize that as well?
Yeah. Yeah, we will. We do have to make the very clear caveat, and this is where this piece becomes really, really crucial, is their attribution list. It's conveying to me treatment, payment, and operations. I can't just blanket give you anyone. I got to make it specific to your network. So if you give me a list of 16,000 people that you are responsible for, and I'm going to find endocrine disorders, rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm going to find these things for you, you're going to pay me for that value, if that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, so
don't do it in December. Do it in January or even this December once you know what the enrollment list is.
Exactly. They get most payers give it to us every month, some give it to us daily. And that allows us to understand, okay, who you're insured by. Now I'm gonna interpret their lab results to say pregnant, like go get them. And they'll pay us on a subscription model. And what we do, we've had two legal opinions that either you can do it under your lab, you can do it as a TriCor contract, but it's a little risky in terms of the inducement and all that kind of stuff. We recommend you actually create your own additional entity and contract through that. So we do have like a, I don't want to say shell company, but it is just an IT type contract that says we'll do this for you. But you will pay the contract to this company.
So we all know this data is really important, but it's all about granularly getting it done in the clinic.
It is.
We, unfortunately, we not only our lab, but we also have a large provider group, too. So,
yeah.
You know, getting the doctor's bench for this test and getting the thing done. As far as how successful have you been on that, you know, changing habits? And I know we can say we're, driving, we pay your check, you need to do this.
Yeah.
We
That's a great question. We're what's up? Oh, you're, yeah, I'm not repeating. Yeah, your question, my friend, is do you use the information to help guide or standard practice with providers in that piece? And we do that sometimes, but I will tell you, we're in the middle of a negotiation right now with Blue Cross Blue Shield, who is denying us for amylase and lipase ordered together. And they're saying, go educate all your providers on that. And I'm like, I'm not going to go educate 3,000, like that, I'm not going to do that. I will prove to you that if you want me to change that ordering practice, this is going to be the downstream effect. You are not going to do very well in risk adjustment now. You're not going to do all these additional things just because you want me to have a provider stop ordering a $5 lipase. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. So we sometimes use it to fight back. But if there is an instance where it's, we do need to change practices because College of Pathology or something will tell us that it's not a good thing to do, then we'll do that. Yes, sir?
So you just mentioned denial, so you're also managing P35 data?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's in the TriCor database?
Yeah.
So that's part of the attribution list, I guess?
Yeah. That's a good question. 835s, 837s, those pieces, they're in a separate database that allows us to then say, okay, we're getting dinged. Like, we do see an increase in this.
So are you doing, like, hard-coded analysis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll merge the accession with the longitudinal history of the patient to then say, okay, Blue Cross, like, you want me to stop doing this. Here's the downstream effect that you're going to have. So back off. Stop denying us. I appreciate all of you for sticking through this. Thank you so much. Hopefully it was helpful.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.